This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Mario Ritter Jr. in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight, the United Nations Security Council is looking into the humanitarian crisis in Cameroon.
We've always said that the primary responsibility for the protection of populations is with the government.
That's Allegra Baucci, coordinator of the UN's humanitarian effort in the country. Also, we discuss the recent violence against Christian churches in Burkina Faso, and security forces repel an attack against an Ebola treatment center in the Democratic Republic of Congo. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, gunmen in Burkina Faso attacked a Roman Catholic church yesterday, killing six people, including a priest. Local officials said the attack took place during the religious service of Mass in the northern town of Dablo. Officials say between 20 and 30 gunmen entered the church, attacked worshippers, and then set fire to the church, and also raided and stole from a local health center. Concerns about an increasing number of violent attacks linked to religion in Burkina Faso and other countries in the Sahel region, south of the Sahara Desert, are growing. To tell us more about the most recent religious attacks in Burkina Faso, we spoke to Bagassi Koura, managing editor of VOA's French to Africa service. Bagassi, thanks for being here with us today.
You're welcome.
Bagassi, this is not the first violent attack in a religious center in Burkina Faso. Just 2 weeks ago, a Protestant church was violently raided. Which groups do officials say are responsible for these attacks?
Up to now, it's not clear yet because these attack, the previous one and the one yesterday, no one has really claimed to have done it. So it's not clear who has done it, but we know that there are a myriad of terror cells in the Sahel. We have Amadou Koufa groups in Burkina and also in Mali. You have Malam Diko groups. And so we have several groups who have from time to time claim some attacks, but these attack on civilian, no one has claimed yet. So it's really hard to say, but all indicate that these are terror attacks.
Now, these terror attacks, are they targeting only Christians or have they been targeting other groups?
Yes, here's how it started. They started by targeting military officials, security forces. For the last 2-3 years, it was only on security official, and then they move on to civil servant. Thousands of them have fled. People are estimating about 150,000 civil servants have left, including students. School have closed. You know, nurses and hospital have closed in the east and northern part of the country. And up to now, civilians have been spared. I mean, people who have nothing to do with government. But with this first church attack and the second yesterday, it's, you know, moving to religious conflict territory. But what we can tell is that other religious leaders have been killed in the past, but they were just not Christians. Most of the time, there are other Muslim leaders in communities that do not want to be part of terror activities.
Burkina Faso and other countries in the Sahel have been facing more and more violence by Islamist rebel groups. What do you think the cause of this violence is, and why is it increasing?
Yeah, it's really hard to tell because even when people claim the different attacks they have been doing, they don't express clearly the root cause of their action. What we have heard clearly was that French and Western troops need to leave northern Mali and to leave the Sahel. As long as these troops are in place, then they will, you know, try to organize and attack all Western interests in the region. That might be one of the root cause. One reason might be the situation in Libya that has helped the spread of weapon, the easy access of weapon to all these criminal groups who for a long time were, you know, doing drug trafficking and other cigarette smuggling and stuff like that. But now they do have easy access to weapon, and that helped them a lot since the situation in Libya. But it's not really clear, because even people who are proposing to negotiate, they don't know on which base they will have to negotiate, because nobody's really expressing clearly what is the problem.
Bagassi Koura, managing editor of VOA's French to Africa service, thank you for shedding some light on this difficult issue.
You're welcome.
Sudan's public prosecutor says former President Omar al-Bashir has been charged with incitement in the deaths of protesters. Bashir, who earlier was charged by the International Criminal Court with war crimes and genocide linked to the Darfur conflict in the 2000s, has not been seen in public since he was ousted by the military on April 11th. He reportedly was under house arrest before being moved to a prison. Protests over rising prices for food and fuel began in December and quickly became a movement to remove Bashir. Protest organizers claim about 100 protesters were killed, while the government has said the toll was much lower. Discussions were held today between the protest leaders and the Transitional Military Council on how to move forward. The UN Security Council is set to informally discuss the separatist crisis in Cameroon for the first time today. The discussion comes at a time when the conflict is escalating, with many internally displaced persons from the English-speaking regions escaping to the French-speaking zones, where some live in desperate conditions. Moki Edwin Kanzeka reports from Yaoundé.
President, don't send me for camp, Beguna, say, me this trouble.
This is Cameroon's Prime Minister Joseph John Goute visiting the English-speaking town of Bamenda on Saturday, begging people to ask their relatives who have joined separatist fighters to come back home. John Goute says President Paul Biya has sent him to say he is ready for an all-inclusive dialogue, but will not discuss separating Cameroon. As the Prime Minister went begging for peace, the military announced that the war against the separatists had intensified, with many of their camps destroyed and at least 24 fighters killed. The baby of 38-year-old Flora Yenos cries at the Obili Catholic Church in the French-speaking capital Yaoundé. She says she escaped fighting last week from her village Bafanje in the English-speaking northwest region. She says she lost her husband in a battle with the military.
I call my sister. I say, "Where are they for Yaoundé? I beg me, can't tell me."
She says when she arrived in Yaoundé, she and her four kids did not have anything to eat and drink and lacked a place to sleep. She says the Catholic Church allowed her to lodge in a classroom and asked Christians to contribute for their upkeep after all of her relatives had told her they could not assist because they were already hosting many IDPs. She says her children are very sick and lack food. Cameroon's unrest began in 2016 when English-speaking teachers and lawyers demonstrated against the growing dominance of French in the officially bilingual country. The government responded with a crackdown and separatists launched an independence movement saying they were defending their people. The United Nations says at least 500,000 people have been displaced by the fighting. Allegra Baoche, coordinator of the UN system in Cameroon, says their humanitarian needs are increasing by the day.
We are fully aware of how many people are suffering on so many different needs, whether it's health, education, protection, violence, and I think the commitment is there to try and reach as many people as possible. We've always said that the primary responsibility for the protection of populations is with the government, so our action has to come in complementarity.
Last week, Human Rights Watch said 1,800 people have been killed in the war and said it had documented cases of the government detaining and torturing alleged separatists and holding some incommunicado detention. Ilaria Alegrozzi is senior researcher for Human Rights Watch in Central Africa.
We have compounded accounts from former detainees with information provided by former detainees, families and lawyers, as well as forensic experts who have reviewed and analyzed a number of photos and videos showing torture or signs of torture on the bodies of the detainees.
Human Rights Watch says it is calling on the United Nations Security Council to condemn torture and incommunicado detention and call for the government to end these practices that have persisted since the crisis began. Paul Atanganji, Cameroon Territorial Administration Minister, says separatists are responsible for the wave of abductions, killing and torching of public buildings, including schools and hospitals. He says the government, in its effort to bring peace, will forgive fighters who laid down their weapons.
I want to make it very clear. Those who voluntarily lay down their weapons will not go to jail. Those are instructions from the President of the Republic. They will be Cameroonians, I can call them, born again.
Analysts say since discussions at the United Nations Security Council will be informal, they just expect Cameroon to be condemned for its poor handling of the crisis and asked to organize an all-inclusive dialogue. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Mario Ritter Jr., and at 17 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Yesterday's attack on a church in Burkina Faso has officials worried about the growing extremist violence in the Sahel area. The UN plans to discuss growing tensions between English and French speakers in Cameroon, and Gambian police have arrested 15 protesters calling for President Adama Barrow to step down. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Police and soldiers in the Democratic Republic of Congo have expelled the latest attack on an Ebola treatment center, killing one attacker. Government officials said the attack took place overnight. The mayor of the town of Batumbo in North Kivu province told the French news agency AFP that the attacker killed was a member of the Mai Mai rebel group. The mayor added that the attackers were prevented from entering the area where patients were being treated. North Kivu is the center of the most recent outbreak, which has infected about 1,600 people, killing more than 1,100. Efforts to control the highly infectious Ebola viral disease in the eastern DRC has been harmed by armed conflict. Mai Mai fighters and some local people have been resisting foreign efforts to control the spread of the deadly disease. Last week, a United Nations special representative to the DRC denounced local rumors that foreign aid workers were trying to harm local people. In sports, three African players are sharing the award for top goal scorer in Britain's Premier Soccer League during the 2018-2019 season. Sadio Mane and Mohamed Salah of Liverpool and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang of Arsenal shared the Golden Boot Award with 22 goals each. Aubameyang comes to British soccer from Gabon, while Egyptian Salah and Mane of Senegal are teammates and stars on Liverpool. Mane gained a share of the award by scoring twice on the final day. Salah received the award for the second year in a row, although this year's top goal total was the lowest in 8 years and 10 fewer than Salah's record from last year. Many of the world's top players compete in the British Premier League, which regularly ranks among the world's best. In the Gambia, police arrested 15 protesters who called on President Adama Barrow to step down from power by December, when the 3-year transitional rule with his coalition government partners is set to expire. The protesters were granted bail pending court appearances. Reporter Patanderi Mbai reports.
The protesters say they are part of a movement called Operation 3 Years Jotna. Jotna is a Wolof local dialect word that means it is time for Barrow to respect the transition period that he had agreed to. The protests occurred along the Senegambia area, which is frequented by tourists. The protesters were later rounded up and taken into custody on charges of conduct conducive to the breach of the peace. President Barrow came to power in December 2016 after defeating longtime dictator Yahya Jammeh. Barrow has fired virtually all his cabinet members who formed the coalition government since assuming to the presidency 2 years ago. Ibrahim G. Sankare is the spokesman for the Gambian government.
Legally, the president is constitutionally mandated to stay in power for 5 years, and thereafter there will be elections. However, the people who formed the coalition government somehow anticipated that it was going to be a 3-year mandate, and thereafter the president would step down and fresh elections would be conducted. So there is a huge constitutional controversy surrounding the tenure of the president, whether he has to go by the 3-year gentleman's agreement, quote-unquote.
Sankare has appealed to Gambians to be civil on matters of national discourse. He also calls for the respect for the rule of law.
Whether it's 3 years or 5 years, it's up to the Gambian people, because they are ultimately their country. What I'm trying to say is we have to be civil. We have to be respectful, and then let's respect the due process of the law. There is a constitution in place. The constitution says President Barrow, or any potential president for that matter, has a mandate, a 5-year mandate, to serve his people. This man was elected, and then he has that mandate.
Pasamba Jau is a member of the pro-democracy Gambian group called the Democratic Union of Gambian Activists, DUGA. Jau says he found the arrest of the activists as very troubling.
First of all, one might disagree with the motives of those that are protesting or their messaging, but we cannot have a country where peaceful protesters are being arrested without justification.
Amnesty International has recently called on the Barrow government to repeal laws that restrict the right to freedom of expression, assembly, and association. It also hailed the government for its plans to abolish the death penalty.
We cannot continue to live in a country where anybody who wants to exercise a democratic right is arrested on the guise of they did not have a permit. This whole permit thing is nonsense. These people were not breaking any law. They have not violated any law. They have not violated any properties. They have not insulted anybody. They went there with their leaflets and say, we don't want the 5 years, we want 3 years.
Jau says any responsible democratic government would have provided escort for the protesters and not to arrest them. Police spokesman ASP Lamin Jai told VOA that the Tory security unit personnel tried to dispel the protesters peacefully, but the protesters wouldn't heed to their call. For VOA Africa, this is Patanderi Mbai reporting.
Zimbabwe has clamored for outside investment in recent years, but villagers north of the capital are resisting a Chinese mining project they say will spoil the environment and fail to bring them much benefit. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Those are villagers from Domboshava, a rocky area north of Zimbabwe's capital, disputing a Chinese company's decision to start quarry mining. 70-year-old Florence Nyamande is among those saying no to the proposed project by Ayua Juan Company.
The Chinese are the money mongers of the Zimbabweans. They take the riches here, they take it to China. They don't develop our places, so we don't need them here. Seriously, with a deeper heart, with a deeper mind, seriously, we are disappointed. We said no and no, and that is multiplicated no.
The villagers do not think Ayua Jianye will create the 500 jobs in the area it promised. They also say the quarry mining will leave large ponds filled with dirty water. Zimbabwe Deputy Minister of Information Energy Mutodi, who is the parliament member for the area, is also against the $500 million quarry mining project. He says he is not going against President Emmerson Mnangagwa's mantra that Zimbabwe is open for business.
It's open to business, but not business that is going to affect our environment. The people it's unanimous. We want to preserve the environment. We want our community to develop, yes, but let our environment remain intact. We cannot have a situation where people come here, mine, and take away the proceeds, enjoy the process in other countries, yet our people remain poor.
Mutodi notes that the Chinese company has advertised for only 40 jobs in the area, less than one-tenth of what it promised. Percy Mudzidzwa, whose company Geo Global Environmental Solutions is representing the Chinese firm, rejects the allegations that 20,000 people would be affected by the 33-hectare mining project. Some locals say the project will affect a graveyard and a natural spring. Mudzidzwa says that is not the case.
Even a grave is not going to be moved. But there's a misconception of saying we propose that the graves will be fenced. There's a spring which is just above the gravesite. We also propose that water will be fenced too.
Now the project awaits for the country's Environmental Management Agency to make a final call if the Chinese company can go ahead. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website, voaafrica.com. Stay tuned for Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Africa, I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.